Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popak. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. This week's guest is Ezra Freck, an American Paralympic athlete who just qualified to represent our country in Tokyo at the Paralympic Games. Ezra was born without most of his left leg, but that hasn't slowed him down one bit. Not only is he an Olympian, he's also the co-founder of Angel City Sports for kids, adults, and veterans who are differently abled. All that, and he's only 16. My conversation with Ezra is next.
This is Common Denominator, straight up conversations with Moshe Popak. Now, here's Moshe.
Hi, Ezra, and welcome to the show.
What's up? Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So, Ezra, first things first, congratulations on becoming an Olympian.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, very happy. Good. I'm in a good mental place for sure right now.
It must have been quite a few days in Minneapolis. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, for sure. My dad, my coach and I, we flew down to Minneapolis for Paralympic trials. And we spent the whole week there. And there was a lot of nerves, a lot of excitement, a lot going on. But I performed when I had to perform. And grateful to make the team, grateful to be in this position. So it was a hell of a week. We celebrated, we went out, had a good time after, and grateful to have made the team. It was a nerve-wracking one, but we did it, so.
You also became a national champion in the 100 meter and the long jump.
Yeah, right? That happened too, so all together it was a pretty cool week for sure.
Yeah, I always love the story when Will Smith says, you know, when you and your friends want to go skydiving, so the day before, all that buildup, right? It's you don't sleep the night before. And then you don't eat the morning of, all leading up.
But it's funny you say you don't sleep the night before, because I kid you not, the night before I was competing, I could not fall asleep and I was stressing out and I was like, why can't I? So it's funny you say that, because I did not be able to sleep the night before. That's funny.
Yeah, but I'm really proud of you that you were able to show up, because that's what it's about. So tell me about the moment when you actually qualified for the Olympics.
It was in the high jump, and I knew I had to hit a certain mark to make the team. And going in, we knew what it was. We knew I was capable of clearing it. I've cleared heights a little bit higher than that before, but I hadn't cleared that specific height yet. I hadn't jumped it yet. So going in, I was very confident. I was very prepared. I was in a really great mental place. I was very happy to be there. And it was almost like one of those out-of-body experiences where it's sort of like, you're just taking it all in. And I was really trying to be present. I was trying to be there, take the moment in, appreciate how cool and special this was. And, you know, once I cleared it, you know, in the competition, I cleared the bar and I just walked over to my coach and I was trying to stay focused and everything. And I was like, that was it. We just made the team. Right. We sort of had this like, weird moment where I was like, that was it. Like 3-4 seconds of a jump and I just made the team. It was pretty special. And then after the fact, it sort of started to sink in more, but it was a special moment for sure.
So going to Tokyo, what do you look forward to the most?
I think I look forward to the most just sort of showing what we've been working on. Because we've put in we've put in so many hours on the track doing things that very few of these athletes are doing. And so I'm very excited. We didn't perform as well as I would have liked to at trials in the three events. And I take it as a blessing in disguise a little bit. Because now the world, the other athletes, they don't really know what I'm capable of yet, but we know what I'm capable of. So it's just a matter of putting it all together at one competition in one moment. And I'm very excited to show the world, to shock a lot of people, and to turn some heads in the process. So
you're going to be competing in the long jump, high jump, and 100 meter. Which of those are you most excited about?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm excited about all of them for different reasons. So the high jump, that's arguably my best event. And that's the chance that I have, the event that I have the highest chance of medaling in. So I'm very excited for that because that's going to be really cool to just be in that position to come in, you know, not as much of an underdog. The long jump, I'm an extreme underdog here. I am probably, no one is going to expect me to go out there and medal, But me and my coach, me and my team, we feel confident. If I can put together a good jump and have one of those miracle days, I can be in medal contention in long jump, which would shock a lot of people and be pretty epic just to have this 16-year-old come out of nowhere and medal. So that's why I'm excited for long jump. Then the 100 meter is sort of like, you know, it's sort of like the event that we haven't been able to spend much time working on because we're sort of balanced between the two. But it's looking really promising and who knows what can happen because, you know, everyone, you have to just show up on the day. So I'm excited for that because that's sort of like a toss up. Like who knows what could happen. So I'm excited for all three of them for different reasons. I don't know which one I'm more excited for, but they're all, I'm very excited. It's like, I don't know if you can tell, but I'm very excited.
I definitely can tell. Well, we're really happy for you and we wish you the best in Tokyo. I want to shift gears a bit and go back to your childhood. Tell us a little bit about growing up, what that was like. Again, only 16 and you have maturity of a 50-year-old. I think it's really one of a kind. And, you know, it's really inspirational. What were some of the things that stuck out in your mind being disabled, going through childhood?
You know, as much as I'd love to sit here and sort of say that it was extremely easy and, you know, it was this, you know, walk in the park my whole childhood, that was not the case. And growing up, so the medical story is I was born with one finger on my left hand and I had a lower left leg that was curved in towards my waist. And then at 2.5 years old, I had a surgery. The doctors removed the curved part of my left leg and then took the big toe and put it onto my left hand. So I have two fingers on my left hand and a stump that fits into a prosthetic leg much easier than before because the leg was really curved in towards my waist. And, you know, growing up, I was stared at 24/7. As any person with a disability knows, everywhere you go, people staring, people pointing fingers, whispering. And it wasn't easy at first. It wasn't easy for my parents. It wasn't easy for my family. And especially wasn't easy for me. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on and people say things, people underestimate you. You know, you see kids your age whispering and pointing. And a lot of that got to my head for a while. And I would tell my parents, like, you know, why was I born like this? Why me? Why did God pick me to be the one born with, you know, missing a leg and two fingers? And it really wasn't until I got a little bit older where I sort of realized that I was born this way, right? There's nothing I can do to change the fact, that I'm missing a leg and only have two fingers on my left hand. There's no point in sulking in this sadness, going to this dark place when there's literally nothing I can do about it. And so when that flip sort of switched and I realized that, you know, I was just like, I'm just going to make the most out of my life. Have a great time. Who cares if I'm the only kid in my school with one leg?
Yes.
And so it was tough, but that once that switch began to flip, and then once it finally flipped, it was, you know, I was like, who cares? People stare at me. Yeah, come on, look at me. Like, come up, talk. I'll tell you about my disability. Yes. Like, you know, so once that flip switched, it changed a lot for me.
I think that what you're saying is unbelievable. I know the greatest people that I've ever met has had tremendous, tremendous trials and tribulations. And what happens is you in through the darkness. And you journey through that space and that decision to surrender and accept what is. I know a big part of your resilience comes from sports. When did you first decide you wanted to be an athlete?
I sort of have been a really competitive kid since I was really young. You know, my parents tell me stories about how I would watch Laker games and I learned to count by twos before ones from watching basketball so much because the scores went by twos. And my first word was ball. So I just loved sports. I loved being active.
Yeah.
But once when you really take a step back and I look at why sports, why do I do this? Why is it so meaningful in my life? Especially growing up, like I talked about, and as I got older, it was sort of an escape for me, right? It was a place where I wasn't necessarily, when you're playing basketball, I'm not thinking about my disability. I'm not thinking about the fact that I'm the only kid in my school with one leg. Right? I'm not concerned about people staring or whispering or underestimating me. It was like an escape. It was like a sort of meditation where I could, you know, forget. I could leave my disability almost behind me and just be one of the guys, be one of the basketball players. And so I gravitated towards sports because it allowed me to fit in that sense and do something that I love, which was being competitive and being active. And so that's probably, I think that's taking a step back, why I gravitated towards sports so much. But then, yeah, once I started taking it seriously, sort of became a job that I love. So,
you know, all these things that you've accomplished in athletics, what are a couple of the most important lessons that sports has taught you about yourself?
I mean, I think sports is so meaningful in so many different aspects of life. For me personally, sports has taught me to be patient, right? A lot of times you want to rush things. A lot of times you want results right away, especially this track season leading up to Tokyo and making the team has been the most stressful and most difficult season of my entire life. Ups and downs. You weren't performing well and this was going wrong and we were adjusting. Well, it was like this whole craziness going on, this whole mess. But ultimately we trusted the process. We were patient with the results. We knew that ultimately, you know, the work would show, and it eventually did. So, I mean, learning to be patient with results and patient with how things pan out. If everyone wanted to accomplish something great and then it just happened, it wouldn't be as great. It wouldn't be as special. So it's the work that's put in behind the scenes, and then the patience and trusting of the process. And then on top of that, I learned a lot about myself, and I learned that like I have to just put my head down and work. And it's great because it's something that I love to do. Yeah. But I learned like hard work really does equal results. Like
yes, it does.
It really does. Me and my coach put in so much time, and I sacrifice everything for the sport. Literally everything. Friends going out late at night, you know, going to all this, hanging out, eating junk food, whatever it might be. I sacrificed so much, and it's fine. It's starting to pay off. So it really shows that the hard work that, you know, I put in, me and my coach and my team is beginning to pay off now. So I guess hard work and patience are a few of the things that I've learned through sport.
And I love that you take all of this to inspire other people. You fill stadiums of 20,000 people. Hard to fathom, but it's real. It's real. It's unbelievable. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, since I was younger, I've been giving public speeches, and I feel this obligation, right, to share my story, to use the experiences and the stuff that I've been through to help other people, help inspire them, improve their life in any way. And so, yeah, I've been giving speeches since I was 4 years old, 5 years old. And, you know, eventually it got to the point where, you know, we're speaking in front of stadiums filled with people. But I truly do it because I enjoy sharing my story. And, you know, I'm grateful to be in a position where my story can help inspire other people and influence other people's lives in a positive way. So, you know, whether that's through speaking or whether that's through sport or whether that's through social media or whatever it might be, I'm grateful to be in a position to have that type of influence. So yeah, speeches are great. I love speaking.
Give us a story about someone you've inspired.
I had a buddy who he was just starting his season, his sports. I think it was soccer or something like that. And this was like a year or two ago. And he was not a very confident kid. One of those kids that, you know, doesn't walk out with their chest out, doesn't walk in with that type of confidence. And it was showing up on the soccer field. He wasn't very aggressive. He wasn't very confident. He was very indecisive. And, you know, I told him something that my mom told me, actually. My mom told me when I was younger, when I was growing up, I was similar, right? When I'd walk into a room, I felt like people were watching me. I felt a little bit insecure. My mom told me, she said, walk in the room with your chest out and like you own the place. And so now every time when I walk into a room, I walk in with my chest out, like I own the place, right? As if I'm the man, right? Not even in a cocky, arrogant way, just because I had to. Because I felt the stares, I felt the whispers, I felt people looking at me 24/7. So just got to walk in like I own it, act like it doesn't bother me, right? And then it won't. Yeah. And so I told him that story, and you know, I had him just like notice, like when I walk into places, look at everyone staring, and you know, the tension changes, but it doesn't matter to me, right? I walk in with my chest out, walk in like I own the place, just like my mom told me. And you know, it's my buddy. So I was sort of just talking to him. I wasn't thinking it would really, you know, having a conversation, you don't realize the impact it might have. Yeah. And then, you know, he went on to have an amazing season. And months later, he came back and he told me, he's like, it was that conversation that we had that flipped the switch. And I was able to come into the games with, I walked in like I owned the field. I owned the ball. You know, he came in like he was the man, and he played like the man. And so it's so interesting because like there's lots of people on social media who have said stuff that I, you know, your story is very inspiring, but this was one of the most meaningful things to me because like I didn't even intentionally, I was just talking to my buddy and it ended up making a long-term lasting impact on his soccer and his confidence and his performance. And it was one of those moments that I'll never forget. It was like that hit home. I was like, thank you. I was like, yes. I didn't even mean to, but.
That's such a cool story. And you're helping plenty of other people as well with Angel City Sports.
Yeah, Angel City Sports is a nonprofit that my family and I started to provide sports for people with physical disabilities in Southern California specifically, and now we're starting to branch out. But this the story about Angel City is pretty cool is because we were traveling all across the country to find these track meets when I was younger. We were going Arizona, you know, then we're in Oklahoma, then we're in Minnesota, then we're going all over the country, right? And we realized there's an extreme lack of adaptive sports opportunities in Los Angeles. Like Los Angeles, you get the people, you got the weather, you got the facilities. Like how is this not happening in Southern California? Where is the adaptive sports programming? Because you think about it, someone in a wheelchair, they can't just show up to the YMCA and play pickup basketball with the able-bodied guys there. No, they have to be playing against guys in wheelchairs. There's lots of equipment involved. So it's a long process. And on top of that, we know what sports does for the community. We know how it brings people together, what it does for you physically, psychologically. Sports does so much. So Angel City Sports is now forming this own community right within the Los Angeles area of all these, you know, people with different types of physical disabilities who love to compete, love to be active, and they now feel like they have a community behind them. Because it's very lonesome. Like for a lot of these people, it's very lonesome walking around the world with a physical disability, being, like I said, stared at. You feel like an outsider. You feel alone. So to have a place where you can go, where you're not the only person with one leg, you're not the only person in a wheelchair, you're surrounded by people who are similar to you and doing sports, the most fun thing in the world, yeah. You know, what else? So that's what we do with Angel City. And
That's tremendous, by the way. Because we are social beings, and a sense of belonging is the greatest things that we yearn for as humans. So what do you now that you've achieved at 16, tell me about your vision for your life. Like what's next for you to achieve? Like kind of like big picture.
I think I'm meant to do two things. I feel we're put on earth for a reason. We have a purpose. We have a higher purpose. And I think mine is, one, to put the Paralympics on the map, get the Paralympics in mainstream media, show people the beauty of this movement, the beauty of this sport, because it truly can inspire so many people. And then on top of that, I feel I have an obligation to show the world what people with physical disabilities can do. Because really, we can do anything an able-bodied person can do. We might do it differently. You know, it might not look the exact same. But people with disabilities are underestimated, counted out, feel like outsiders across the world. And any small role that I can play in that movement and helping educate the general public, that's one of the reasons that I feel I was put on this earth and one of the things that I'm meant to do. So,
well, Ezra, this has been an absolute pleasure. If people want to learn more about you and follow your Olympic journey, how can they do that?
Thank you. Yeah, I have Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram, Team Ezra 05. I pretty much also social media. That's my handle. And then, you know, my Angel City Sports, if anyone wants to, you want to volunteer, you want to get involved, you want to donate, whatever it might be, just at Angel City Sports on all social media as well. I'm very active on Instagram. And so I'll be posting a lot about this summer and about Tokyo coming up. And then as well as with Angel City, we have a summer games this summer. It's going to be virtual and in person, still sort of dealing with the repercussions of the pandemic. But yeah, if anyone wants to get involved and stay in touch, for sure.
And when are you heading out to Tokyo? When does that happen?
I fly out August 10th. So I got almost exactly 6 weeks until I leave. So
beautiful. Well, I want to wish you the best of luck. I'm sure you'll do amazing. And thank you. I love speaking with people that inspire other people. That's what it's about. That's why we're here on this earth. So blessings. 100%. And thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. This was such a good conversation. I truly feel connected. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Common Denominator. Join me next week when my guest will be Dr. Sonali Ruder. Not only is Sonali an ER doctor, She's also a trained chef and the author of numerous cookbooks. She'll discuss food as medicine and how eating healthy can also be delicious. Until then, have a great week and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.